Today is Sunday, November 26th, 2023. This is part three of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Dan Cockrum. Dan spells his last name C-O-C-K-R-U-M. My name is Tom Martin, and good afternoon, Dan. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing fine, thank you. You had a good Thanksgiving, I hope.
I did, thank you very much, and I wish you the same. Hope you had the same as well. Dan, may we have your permission to record this oral history over the telephone?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Dan, I wanted to go back to where we left off in part two. In 1964, after you graduated with a civil engineering degree from Texas Tech, can you pick that story up?
Yeah, that's correct. Graduated in 64, and after two previous summers with the Park Service while I was in college, I got the appointment to a permanent position as a civil engineer in the Western Office Design Construction, and my classmate from kindergarten through college, Ben Clary, was in the same boat as I was.
Hmm.
And so, in fact, he had one summer ahead of me with as a student engineer.
Okay.
And so we loaded up my Thunderbird with two or three-foot lockers, one on top of the T-Bird on a on a rack.
Oh, my gosh.
And that was right after graduation. As soon as we got out of college, we headed for San Francisco to check in for permanent positions with the WODC, Western Office. Most of the time it was called Western Office, but it was Western Office Design and Construction. And it was known with the acronym WODC, and there was a similar office in Richmond with the EODC.
Oh.
And they were both established, I mentioned it earlier, established by Mission 66 program, under the Mission 66 program.
Okay.
So anyway, we headed for California from Lubbock. Ben was living in Lubbock at the time, and I was in a little town post south of Lubbock. So I picked him up, and we headed west. We went to Vegas, first time for either one of us.
Okay.
And then while we were there, we remembered that we had a classmate from high school that was started in Texas Tech, but he transferred to San Francisco. Anyway, he's working for the WODC, and he was at Death Valley.
Oh, wow.
And he's still in college in art at San Francisco College.
Okay.
And so we decided we'd swing by and see him, and we did that. And then we continued our journey. Got into California, headed up the east side of the Sierras, and was going to cut over, decided we, if the road was open, we would cut over to Yosemite.
This is
from that highway.
This is Tioga Pass you're talking about.
Right, yeah. And we found out it was open, so we decided we'd go up that way.
Okay.
And it was more than the Thunderbird could handle. Just a few miles from the summit, the transmission went out.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it was there we were. We finally got word, I can't remember how we got word down. The nearest wrecker was in Bridgeport. It's a little white spot in the road.
Okay.
And so we got a wrecker, took us down there. They had one place there that had auto shop mechanics, and they had to order a rebuilt transmission from San Francisco to be delivered by bus.
Wow.
So we got a motel room, and Ben got a bus and went on into San Francisco, but okay. I stayed there. My parents had to, we were running out of travel money to cover that kind of an expense.
So yeah.
We had some money wired to me I could borrow from my parents. We got the transmission fixed, and I was there two nights, and I finally got into San Francisco up over Tioga. So I checked in at the federal building, but at that time it was downtown with other municipal buildings in the heart of San Francisco. In fact, it's on the edge of the Tenderloin District, if you're familiar with any of that area out there.
Just barely.
Yeah. Anyway, it was, I think it was 12th floor of this federal building there.
Okay.
And I had a motel on Van Ness Avenue while they were doing, we did all the paperwork and got arrangements for, all set up for me to head for Yellowstone to work for the summer in construction and plan and design on the side in the park.
Before we talk about where you were sent, what happened to Ben? What did he get assigned to do?
He went to Rainier.
Okay.
He'd worked up there previous summer, or one of those summers he'd been up there.
Okay, all right. So you're going to Yellowstone. Had you been to Yellowstone before?
Many years ago with my family, yeah.
Okay, so you'd been there once before on vacation.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
Well, of course, I went to Yellowstone, or I went to Glacier that summer. We drove through Yellowstone to Glacier.
Right. Okay, all right.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay, so you've been through that country. But
we'd been there vacation when I was in high school, but I did drive through there when I went to Glacier for my appointment in Glacier.
Okay. Was the Park Service paying your per diem mileage from San Francisco up there, or were you kind of on your own again?
No, they paid my mileage. They not only mileage, but my official duty station is San Francisco, so the whole time I'm out of San Francisco, I'm getting per diem for real estate, even though I don't own any real estate. Own any real estate, but anyway, travel. It was travel per diem.
Okay,
I got since I was out of the base.
Right. Okay, so
my base operation.
So you're getting paid, and you're getting a little extra on the side for being away from station.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And but before I left there, though, guess what? Transmissions acting up on the Thunderbird.
No way.
And,
the rebuild?
Yeah. Well, I had to delay my leaving San Francisco until I could get it fixed or replaced. And I took it in transmission shop, and what happened was the I won't call him a shade tree mechanic, but over there in that little town,
right,
didn't take the caps off of some vents on the transmission.
Oops.
And so we got that taken care of. I guess I didn't have to pay for that. I guess I had some sort of a warranty on the transmission.
Okay.
So, but it delayed my leaving for a couple of days. But I finally got off and on the way by myself.
Wow.
With nothing to really talk about on my way up there. It was a beautiful drive from that part of California across Nevada and on up to Yellowstone.
Nice. Who did you report to when you got to Yellowstone?
Okay, I was a project engineer, but the project supervisor was a fellow named E.B. Martin, Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, Martin, M-A-R-T-I-N.
Okay.
And he had there was an RAS staff of permanent employees from WODC. There was two inspectors, there was two landscape architects, and I think I was the only new engineer to the staff, but I was stationed at Lake and we had surveys, did surveys for a new water line from Lake to Grant Village, and then I got involved in paving there with at Yellowstone and Old Faithful. We paved all the interior roads there, Old Faithful.
So it had been dirt, is that right?
No, it had been a type of asphalt. Well, it was, what I'm trying to see, what we call cold mix asphalt. It was, you've probably seen it done. They just windrow gravel and soil, and then spray oil on, and then spread it with a maintainer, a road grader.
Right.
And it's up there in that kind of weather, they needed something a little more. They put up with that having a lot of work. So what we did was paved it hot mix,
okay.
A hot mix plant.
Okay.
And paved it. And
yeah, because the oil dirt can be really washboardy. And so I can, with the traffic going up as it was, it made sense to asphalt that.
That's a little bit easier to snow plow.
Oh, right.
Rock mix than it is. Yeah. So anyhow, we replaced those old roads with hot mix. I did some preliminary surveys, topo surveys over Grand Canyon of Yellowstone, a canyon.
Yep.
There's a developed area there called Canyon. Anyway, did some work there. We had to do some surveys. They built a brand new hospital. I can't remember if that was Grant. I can't remember what part of the park that brand new hospital was in.
Isn't
but,
that on the east side?
Yeah. But I can't. It wasn't at Fishing Bridge or Lake where I was. It was somewhere else. But the problem was, they built it and they finished it, but they hadn't opened it. And the winter came, and they were going to open up the spring of 64, the fall of 64. And when they went, they couldn't open any of the doors into the brand new building.
Oh, wow.
Because of frost heaves.
Wow.
They didn't anticipate the water table being high enough, I guess, to do that. Anyway, we went around and dug holes, got samples of the soil. They came up with for designing a drainage around to get the water away from those. That's the foundation of that building. Brand new building. They couldn't open the door.
Wow.
Yeah. And what else did I do that summer? Oh, I got towards the fall, there was a you know where Big Old Battlefield is? Up
no.
Montana?
Uh-uh.
Well, it's where the Nez Perce had a big battle with the Army.
What's it called again? Which battlefield?
Big Hole.
Big Hole, okay. No.
Yeah, two words, Big Hole Battlefield.
Okay.
So it was a very primitive area. It was brand new for the Park Service. They had no permanent building, though. They had a little museum. It might have been built by CCC. It probably was.
Okay.
But they had no winter staff over there. So annually, they'd have to send somebody over to gather up all the museum exhibits, stuff that could be moved, and bring them back to Yellowstone, put them in storage until the next spring, and take them back over there. So turns out that the historian, I found out he was the first Yellowstone historian, Aubrey Haynes.
Okay.
Was available, and he had experience. He had a degree in forestry and surveying, and so we made a deal. I'd help him load that. He had a little truck, a little bobtail truck that would take all the exhibits out, put in it. So I told him I'd help him with that. He was going to help me lay out a survey. It was for planning a new visitor center, housing area, infrastructure, the whole bit.
Wow.
For that area, so it could be maintained, operated year-round, or have a presence there year-round, the Park Service. So we loaded up and went over there. We were told before we left that there was a rancher that was unhappy about that area, and it made some not direct threats, but we want to be kind of watching over our shoulder.
Okay.
He showed up, he might cause some problems. Luckily, he didn't. But what I was doing previous to the bids on construction contracts, you invite the anticipated bidders to come in and get an idea of a staked out area of what's going to be, you know, where the road's going to go, where the utility lines are going to go, so they can make an estimate off the plans of what it's going to take. They can see the terrain, see what kind of soil and whatnot. So I was over there with him, and we were steady as staking. You don't have to be accurate with a tape, or you can do it with a steady shot through the survey, the transit.
Yeah.
On the rod.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with Stadia?
A little bit.
Yeah.
You've got a level. You've got a transit on a tripod.
Right.
And you can just turn your angle and just tell the guy go away or come towards you and put it there.
Yeah.
On the line.
Yeah. And read it. How far away he is? You could get it on the rod that he's got in his holding.
Right. And you didn't have total station back then. This is all trig tables and. Just work it out.
No, we had Allendale's with plane table. You familiar with them? Where you make the topo map right on the site.
Yeah.
Yeah. We used those a few times.
Okay, nice.
But this
can
time
you,
all
you know what, Dan, can you take a minute to tell me how that worked? How did you make a topographic map with a plane table?
Well, you have an Allendale. It's an instrument that's similar to a transit, but it's on a rule, like a brass rule marked off in feet and inches.
Yep.
In engineering tape, it's usually tenths of a foot instead of inches. We use tenths of a foot
okay.
in our survey. Anyhow, you have a man out there with a rod. And you set up your tripod for a plane table. You put the plane table on top of it. It has a level. You have to get it perfectly level, and you have to be over a permanent station, a benchmark.
Okay.
With an elevation, and sometimes they have even the coordinates.
Okay.
Usually it's just an elevation, but you've got a point there that you're going to set up on. With this plane table, you put the Allendale on there and make sure it's all level.
Yep.
And you can send somebody out with a rod and use that stadium to see where they are. And also, when you're looking at the rod, you're going to get the elevation of that area compared to where you're set up. You know the elevation below your plane table. You know how high your plane table is, your Allendale is above the benchmark. So
right.
You got the elevation of your table there. So anyway, you start marking those points, and when you get several points in there, could be for a topo, you try to get different spots for the contours. You don't want to make, when you start drawing the map, the contour map for topo,
mm-hmm.
or you also use that to find, if you have a building out there, you get the four corners, the visible corners of the building. So you can pin that building down to the area you're mapping.
Right, that makes sense.
And that's pretty much the way it works.
So I get the sense that Aubrey, yeah, you helped Aubrey Haynes load up his truck, but he had to run around all over the place for you.
Yeah, but he also let me run some... Here, while he's over there, every time he'd check the battlefield for it wasn't completely explored or surveyed or studied.
Oh, wow.
And he'd get out the metal detector. We went around places he hadn't been yet and found bullets. And But it was his story was, too, how he got it when he was studying all our work for in the forestry, he learned how to build trestles from logs.
Oh, wow.
Well, guess what? World War II came along. He joined the military. When he got back out of the military, by that time, all the steel mills were all fired up, from the war. And nobody wanted more. They weren't going to build any more trestles with wood.
Right.
So he enjoyed history and the history of the park when he worked there. So he became he's the first historian for Yellowstone National Park. He has several books that he published.
Okay.
And that's Aubrey, not Audrey. A-B-U-R, Haynes.
Haynes, okay.
Anyhow.
How do you think he spelled his name?
A-U-B-R-Y?
Okay.
Aubrey?
Yep.
Aubrey Haynes. Yeah, I think you just put you got to be careful with the last name because those, and I don't know if they were related. I never did ask him. But there's some of the concessions up there at the time were Haynes, operated by Haynes family.
Oh,
Haynes
interesting. Street. Huh.
Yeah.
Okay. And is that H-A-N-E-S or H-A-I-N-E-S?
H-A-I-N-E-S, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So you got a chance to hang out with him and explore some of that battlefields out there, and I'm assuming the bullets you found would have been musket balls.
No, they were. This was in 1876, 77, whenever it was. The Nez Perce got chased across. You know, I don't know if you know the story about Chief Joseph.
No, I don't.
Leading the Nez Perce. Oh wow. Well, that's another story. But they. And like other Native Americans, they got displaced from their reservation.
Right.
And they were headed, I think they were trying to get to Canada, but for some reason they didn't want to go up to the western part of Canada. They headed east. And they even, Yellowstone was a park at the time. They even stopped a stagecoach that had tour people in it. Didn't hurt them, but they were just trying to get away from the army that was trying to catch them.
Okay.
And they ended up at, I can't remember if that would be before. I think the big old battle was before they got to Yellowstone. But anyhow, they finally made it. But I may be confused. I can't remember if they got up to, didn't make it finally to Canada or they got stop before they make it, but you can look that up.
Okay.
I confuse them with Sitting Bull. Sitting Bull got, I think, into Canada.
Okay.
But anyhow, it was interesting. It was one of the things in that museum was a mountain howitzer that you could load on the back of a mule.
Huh.
It was light enough to put a, and the story goes during the battle was the Indians overran the crew that was manning that cannon. Is up on part of the hill there.
Okay.
And they tore it apart, got it off its carriage, threw everything, broke up the ammunition box. And when they were all done, one of the Nez Perce guys came up, one of the tribe came up and said, "What'd you do all that for? I learned how that thing operated."
Oh,
I don't know what would have happened. I don't know what would have happened to the U.S. Army if the Indians turned that gun on them.
I bet.
But anyway, yeah. But the Indians had a good retreat out of there. They left some people to hold back the army, and they got the people, the women and children, and got the headed east. Got away from the army. The army beat them up a bit, but they didn't really chase them, I don't think, after that. They had other trying to intercept them along the way, but that bunch, I think they were, had their time as they wanted the battlefield.
Hmm.
So, anyhow, that was right towards the end of my season there in Yellowstone.
And this would have been September, October time?
Yeah. I was actually, I stayed there. There was some work that they could do after the park was closed. And I left there in, about this time of year, when it was before Thanksgiving. I wanted to go home for Thanksgiving. So I took off and headed to Texas.
Oh, okay.
And made it home. But I got caught in some snow over there, coming down from Cheyenne, ground blizzard. First ground blizzard I've ever been in.
Oh, wow.
Oh, but I know what I forgot to tell you. I didn't add in there. Before I left, that's out of the phone. My wife got it. Before I left, it had to be September there at Yellowstone. I was over Cody, Wyoming shopping.
Okay.
And I happened to, that I wasn't happy with that Thunderbird. I wasn't confident I wasn't going to have more problems with that. So I stopped at the Chevy dealer and walked in the building, and he had two Impala convertibles on the showroom floor. It was September.
Okay.
Headed into winter.
Yeah.
And the 65 model are being delivered. So I left that, traded that Thunderbird in for a Chevy 409 Impala Super Sport.
Wow.
425 horses, 2 4 barrel carburetors.
Wow.
Four on the floor. Yeah. Yeah, convertible. Yeah.
Okay. Yellow
back top. Yeah. So it was early enough the year I could enjoy it there before the first snow. But I got kind of concerned about the bears and that convertible.
Okay.
I happened to be over at one of the service stations up there, and a yellow convertible Chevrolet Impala. I don't think it was a Super Sport, but it was black and with a black top. It had been ripped open.
Wow. Well, they must have had some food in there, right? I mean, the bears.
Yeah, like that or chewing gum or something.
Something.
You know, that was something I was very careful about. And then when we had the snow, I was able to put the. By that time, I'd moved out of a temporary quarters. I had an old travel trailer. I'd moved into an apartment there at Lake, and I had access to a garage.
Okay.
So I could put it, lock it up until I left there. And so, anyway, I just thought I'd drop that little bit in
there. So what was the heater like? A heater must have been pretty good, I would think, with a convertible like that. If you're driving in a ground blizzard, you must have, you know, been working to stay warm.
Yeah, it was fine. Yeah,
okay.
It worked fine.
All right.
And in San Francisco, well, I'll get to that. But in San Francisco, I would have the heater on and the windows up without any snow. Just when it got chilled up there, when I go around in that area, I didn't put the top down a lot, except in the summertime.
I bet.
Yeah. So I went.
So you drove back to Post for Thanksgiving.
Yeah, and on my way, I don't know if I knew it before I left Yellowstone, or if they told me after I got back to San Francisco, but they had some projects over at Yosemite contract projects, construction. Replacing the sewer line down the middle of the valley. And the project supervisor over there had use or lose leave. He had to get off, and they need to send somebody over there to watch keep watch over that contract. So I, after checking in, I went to Yosemite.
Okay.
There for about 6 weeks.
So when you were there, you basically let the other engineer who was overseeing that job go use his vacation time.
Exactly.
And you watched that job.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was.
What was that sewer line?
Yeah, brand new sewer line down the middle, down by the. Are you familiar with the park?
Not much at all.
Oh, okay. Well, the Awami Hotel.
Yep.
We went right through their little golf course.
Okay.
Yeah. And replacing some old sewer that they had there.
Hmm.
And it was pretty routine. I stayed in what they call the Ranger Dorm.
Okay.
while I was there. It was a nice rustic totally CCC. Well, it could have been built by the Army, though, come to think of it. Because the Army was there as they were in Yellowstone. Anyhow, and then I went back to the office, and I was, in January of 65, I went to a training session at Grand Canyon for professional employees. It was kind of like what the Rangers take, but it was short, but they had to deal with, it was more about Park Service and, you know.
Dan, your phone is breaking up a little bit. Do you know why that's happening?
I don't know.
Okay. All right.
It's well charged.
Okay. Well, if you're not moving around, then I have no explanations. But I just noticed it's kind of fading in and out there a little bit. Okay. Let's keep going. And if it gets bad, I'll let you know again. January 65. Did they send you to the Albright Training Center then?
This is a little perk that I got out of that deal. Was Albright had a ranger station training going on. And they didn't have all those apartments that they have now. So it'd be in winter and the visitation not like it is nowadays. Stay at the LVAR.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So there, I think 3 weeks going to that training, 2 or 3 weeks.
And what was the training about?
It was a history of the Park Service and
wow,
the history of the Park Service all the way back to the I can't think of my memory's not as good as it was, but the acts that were passed to create the Park Service, how the parks were first administered by the by the U.S. Army, the bigger park.
Right.
And then it prepared us for going out into and knowing something about the outfit we were working for.
And this would have been, if it was the Albright Training Center, it would have been brand new.
Oh, yeah. Kowski was the...
Yeah.
Kowski was the... Yeah. Yeah.
What do you remember about him?
Oh, I remember. I've got a picture of the graduating class somewhere.
His first name was John. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. I know Dave Carricker was there.
Okay.
Who later became the Albright, and then he was Williamsport. He was the director of Williamsport.
Harper's Ferry. Yeah.
Harper's Ferry training.
Before he passed away.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, all right. What do you remember about Kowski, and then what do you remember about Carricker?
Well, I just remember Kowski was, he was good for that course because he had a lot of stories to tell the class about his time in the Park Service.
What kind of stories did he tell? Do you remember?
Oh, not really.
Okay.
I just know it was good to, he kept, when he talked, people listened to it.
Okay.
Yeah. Carricker, who else? Oh, I'm trying to think the other guy that was there that I met when I went to Glen Canyon. Oh, he was a real nice guy. And he was an instructor there, and then he was assistant superintendent at Glen Canyon, but that's another story.
Okay.
And maybe I can look up what his name was.
Okay.
Well, we also got a tour while we were there. We went up to Glen Canyon and got a ride on the big boat they have up there at the time.
Okay.
Cass Hyde, I think, was the name of it.
On the Parks Patrol boat.
Yeah, but it was more the superintendent's yacht that he used for when senators came. That was about a 30-foot boat.
Wow.
Yeah, a cabin cruiser.
Okay.
And that was a field trip we made. We didn't get over the north. It was wintertime, so we didn't get over the north rim.
Right. January would have been cold.
Yeah. We had a, well, we were at one of my friends was one of the, I don't know what the bell was, what his status was. This is when Harvey was running out, the company, and we made acquaintance. And I get to ask if there was a place we could have poker games.
Okay, Dan, hang on a second, because the phone kind of breaking up again. You mentioned you were back at the El Tovar. Now, pick that story up again.
Okay, we made an acquaintance. I just asked this person if there was a place we could have poker. The rooms we were in didn't have anything like a poker table in them.
Okay.
And he said, I tell you what, we don't have any business right now that needs it. We can get a suite that has a big enough table if you'll let me play the game with you.
Oh, wow.
So we got to go in and enjoy, at least play. We didn't spend any time, any sleeping there or anything, but we did enjoy one of those nice rooms there at the El Tovar that, you know, it still has the character it was built with.
I bet. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fun.
And we were there. We could take advantage of the restaurant.
Nice.
There again, we were on per diem.
Very nice.
Yeah. And about that time, when word came down that I might be headed for Grand Canyon to work on a Trans Canyon waterline project.
Okay.
They had an engineer on site that was not happy with being down the canyon. He's a married fella, and I don't know if he had any kids, but he was wanting to get out of there. So I had to wait. And by the time I got back to San Francisco, they said, well, you can head for Grand Canyon.
So you drove from Grand Canyon from this training at Albright back to San Francisco, and they turned you around and said, go back to Grand Canyon.
Well, I didn't drive. I didn't drive to... I rode the plane from San Francisco to...
Got it.
I guess I went to Phoenix and then caught a bus up to Grand Canyon.
Okay.
On my trip. And so I rode back by the same way, I guess, back to San Francisco. And then they said, you know, pack up and head for Grand Canyon.
Okay. Did you... When you were at Albright for this training... Albright is a park within a park, and it can be a little difficult to make friends with the Grand Canyon people when you're in Albright because everybody's doing different things. Did you get a chance to, you know, like poke around on the waterline project? Did you get a chance to kind of talk to any of the Grand Canyon people while you were there doing the Albright stuff?
No, we pretty well stayed. It was, you know, there was snow on the ground. We pretty well stayed. Well, I take it back. We did have, you had the bar and grill, a bar and restaurant, and El Tovar, you had the bar and restaurant, and
the Bright Angel?
Bright Angel.
Okay.
And you also had the bar and restaurant at the Grand Canyon Inn.
Okay. Which was out in Tucson?
No, it was at that mine.
The mine. Whoa, wait. All right.
Yeah,
now because
mine.
All that stuff is gone now. So tell me about the Grand Canyon Inn. What do you remember about it?
I just remember the bar. and it had a swimming pool, an open swimming pool out in the back.
Was it still open? I mean, it's January. That should have been frozen over. What was going on then?
Well, there was enough that they had people there. We kind of made the tours. That was, if you wanted to do bar hopping, that was where you went. You went there, you went to, and then out to Tucson was Bob Thurston's bar and grill.
Yep.
Yep.
And what do you remember about, Thurston's place?
Oh, I spent a lot of time out there.
Well, tell me about it.
Well, we haven't got me to Grand Canyon. I didn't do all that. None of that. I didn't do any of that there while I was at.
Okay. All right. So this is coming up.
This is coming up.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Very good. So I'm writing notes. You're going, oh, tell me more about the Grand Canyon Inn, and tell me more about what was Tucson like in 1965.
Well, Tucson is a pretty wild place to go.
Okay, so let's get you situated there. So you go back to San Francisco, and then they asked you, hey, we've got this water pipeline project. Now, that project hadn't, in January, February of 65, was that still in the planning stage? Had it been contracted out to Halverson to build the thing yet?
It had been contracted out, but there was still a lot of survey. We had to go in and do finish up some survey work that needed to be done. And I can tell you what we did after I got there.
Well, do we have you landed? Was it just as simple as you flew back to San Francisco after the Albright training? And they said, we want you to go back to Grand Canyon and work on this other project. And you were like, sure, fine, and off you went. Or was there more to it than that?
Not much. It's pretty straightforward.
And you drove out there in the 409?
Yep.
Okay.
I drove out there, and that would have been February or March, anyway, early spring maybe. It had to be February. I got out there and... I got settled in. My first place to live there was in a barracks building that CCC had that had been made into a duplex. I had one in, and a married couple had the other in.
Okay.
And it was a creepy old, it was like a military barrack. It's where some of the newer apartments were built here in Mission 66.
Okay, so that building was torn down fairly soon after you were there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I didn't stay there very long. They finally got me. The service center had modular homes, not modular homes, trailers, like 2-3-bedroom trailers that they had spotted out in different parks. So while we were there, they didn't have to provide housing.
Okay.
For us, so I eventually got into a trailer.
And where was that? Was that in what they call Trailer Village? Sort of.
No.
Where was that? Where were the trailers set up?
It was over. I remember Park Circle.
Okay. Yep. Sure enough.
Part of Park Circle had trailer mobile homes in there before. A lot of those houses there. On Park Circle, Mission 66 houses were built earlier in that project, mission. You know, it started in 56. You know, there was 10 years there, almost 9 years. So a lot of development been done by that program.
Okay, but there were trailers in there before the houses were built.
Sure.
Okay.
And of course, those CCC barracks. Those apartments were, and we were still, while I was there at Grand Canyon, there was also a duplex is being built up in the village.
Okay.
Anyway, where was I?
All right. So you drove out there and you got put up in this little duplex, which was soon to be torn down, and then got out of there into one of the trailers on Park Circle.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was just south of the old maintenance area.
Just south. Okay. All right.
Or the old warehouse, you know what I'm talking about.
The new
barns. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. That's right. Which was the first warehouse maintenance area.
Exactly.
Before the second was built, before the third one was built.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And it was the dorms, the CCC buildings, were above where the mule barns are.
Okay.
In fact, there was a big water tower. I don't know what it was still active, but that whole area there was CCC at one time.
Okay.
The CCC camp was on the rim. There was one down in the canyon. But, yeah, some of that remnants, by the time I got back there in 84, all that old water tower was gone. But the old warehouse and everything was still there.
So in 1985, I'm just curious, 1965, had the three-phase electricity been brought in yet, or was electricity still being made at the powerhouse?
No, they had electricity there.
Okay, they'd brought it in by then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because, they had that giant smokestack there at the powerhouse. I'm assuming that had been taken away by 65, but I don't know.
Yeah, it was, but there's another story. When I was there, chief of maintenance, we had to get rid of the diesel fuel tanks, buried tanks that were there that fed those diesel generators.
The big Fairbanks Morris generators. Those two generators in the powerhouse. Yeah.
Yeah. The fuel.
Okay.
That's another story too.
Well, let's not forget that.
Of the surprise we got when we got into that project.
Okay. Generator tanks. I'm just writing that down because that's another story to tell. All right. So you've got a place to stay there. Have you remind me again, you have not been down to Phantom Ranch yet, have you?
No, I had not.
Okay. So you've I'm assuming a lot of what needed to be done had been drawn, and so you would look at the drawings and say, okay, well, here's the lay of the land for the surveying. But you mentioned some of the surveying needed to be completed. What did you get your hands dirty with the first couple weeks you were there?
We had to do, when you lay out a survey, the center line of a project, like a road,
yep,
or even digging a ditch for a You have your stakes showing the center line.
Okay.
But you got to keep in mind that they're going to be digging that up. So you have to reference these points off to the left and right, or maybe it depends on the situation.
Yep.
But you have to have a reference so you can come along, especially with sewer lines, you need to check the elevation to make sure that the sewer's going downhill.
Okay.
You know?
Yep. That's important.
And if you got a situation with a road, if you're going to have to cut through and have banks on either side of the road, you know, you've got to have a reference up above where the top of that bank is going to be so you can make sure the road's where it's supposed to be.
Right, okay.
In the middle of the road, yeah.
Yep.
So anyway, those offsets, they call them, are reference points. So we had a survey crew down there. Most of them were seasonal people. We had any survey people, permanent people from the Western office. These were folks that we picked up there at Grand Canyon.
Okay.
Been working seasonally, laborers for the park. We picked them up for survey crew.
Got it. Okay.
And so I had... did that. There was a problem. Roaring Springs is more than, you know, had just one place where the spring came out. There was a lot of water coming out of a strata.
Yep.
And they wanted to get that funnel. Well, what I'm telling you is something I'm not sure to get away with now because of all the environmental things that were involved.
Sure.
But we went back in that cave with mixed sacrete in burlap bags, sacrete,
okay,
on a backpack, and went back in that cave. I don't know. It seemed like it was a long way. It might not have been, but we had to get down a couple of places on our knees to get where we wanted to make a channel to use those sandbags or cement to develop a permanent channel for that water that was coming out where we were going to put the intake for the water line.
Okay.
What that was all about.
So hang on, Dan, because you're breaking in and out here again. So you've got these probably 60-pound bags of sackcrete, and you've got them on a backpack, I suppose, and you're crawling in this cave to make a channel to channel the water into the intake.
Yeah, these are small burlap bags. We probably had 30 pounds.
Okay. All right. So easier to move.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. And how many of you were working on that?
Just me and Walter Wilcox, the project supervisor.
What was Mr. Wilcox's first name?
Well, M.W. He went by Waldo, W-A-L-D-O.
Okay, Waldo Wilcox.
Yeah, and he was a sharp fellow. He was one of my mentors.
So tell me about W.M.
He came to the park. Well, he got his civil engineering degree at the University of Kansas.
Oh, wow, okay.
And I guess he was in ROTC. I don't know, but he... when World War II broke out, he went into the Army, and he was trained at Fort Lewis, Washington, artillery training. And they put him on a boat with his staff and people, sent him up to the Aleutians. He spent World War II in the Aleutian Island.
Okay.
And I think when the war was over, he was a captain, but he stayed in the reserves and retired as a lieutenant colonel.
Oh, wow.
But anyway, he was very, when he got back from the Army and the war was over, he went to work for the Bureau of Reclamation.
Huh.
And his job before he came to Big, he came directly to He came directly to Grand Canyon from a job that he had been in charge of for a pump station for, I can't remember where it was, somewhere in Colorado. It was a big pump. It's a bigger water line than we were putting in at Grand Canyon.
Yeah, okay.
And so he came directly to the park as a park engineer, chief of maintenance for Grand Canyon.
Okay.
Well, nobody, apparently, I don't know the story exactly, but apparently he had the qualifications that he switched over from being the chief of maintenance, park engineer. He joined WODC. He became a member of the WODC to take this job on.
So he basically left Reclamation to go into the Park Service, but ended up in WODC.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he left to come to the Park Service as a chief of maintenance park engineer at Grand Canyon, but he was right there on the site, and he had I don't know that anybody in that office at that time had his qualifications for what was going to be involved down there. They had a team out there doing the design and planning, but I don't know that any of them had really the hands-on type experience he had during the working for Reclamation.
Okay. Huh. Did they bring in the Reclamation people just because they figured they knew water and water management, how to, pumps and all that kind of stuff? Or did they just, they were looking for whoever they could get?
For the design?
Yeah.
No, they had some people up there. Well, I don't know. I know who was in charge of the team and everything, but I never worked with them or for them. So
okay,
I don't know their backgrounds.
Okay,
but I don't think they had anything like Waldo had.
Okay. All right. So he was he then overseeing the Trans Canyon Pipeline project then?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
All right. So you guys went into the Roaring Springs cave there to channel that water into the intake.
Yeah. It dried up a lot of seepage around there.
Oh, okay.
Like I say, there was all these little dripping springs and stuff that we dried more or less. I'm not sure we could do it today.
Right, right. We're way more sensitive to that stuff. But back then, it was made perfect sense.
Yeah.
Is to funnel that water into one intake. Did you guys then build up the funnel basically that went up to start that intake pipeline?
Well, it's a box, yeah.
Okay.
I described it in that paper I wrote about old Pioneer. It was an intake box that had an overflow. We weren't going to take all that water.
Okay.
Some of it had to go down. Had to go down to Broad Angel.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And did you give any consideration at the time to what we now know today as in-stream flows? Was it simply that, okay, the pipeline is only so big, it can only handle so much water, and we want that, and we don't want any air in that, and the rest of it we're going to spill, and we don't care?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the pipeline is what you could call an inverted siphon.
Okay, yep.
You've got Roaring Springs is higher than...
Havasupai Gardens. Yeah.
So it all flows by gravity.
Yep.
And what we didn't use pump up from any garden, it got dumped in the Garden Creek.
Right. Okay. And so I mean, there's. It sounds pretty simple to basically, you know, you pour water in here and it comes out over there. That's pretty easy. But then you've got to pump that water where it comes out over there up
exactly.
to the rim, and that's a big pump.
It is. That's 600 horsepower, as I remember.
Heavy, heavy lift.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go back for a minute. We're kind of talking about this whole project here. So Waldo, you and Waldo get in there to do the concrete work to get this water being discharged out of this cave into this box.
Exactly.
And today, there's a chlorinator there. Were you guys thinking about chlorine and chlorination back then?
We didn't chlorinate right there, no.
Where did you chlorinate, or did you?
Well, where it was tapped off. Tapped off at... I'm not sure. I don't remember. We didn't have even there when I was in 84. We didn't have. We had a chlorinator at Phantom Ranch on that water line.
Okay.
And I don't think that Cottonwood had any kind of chlorination.
Okay.
And I'm not sure the residents of the powerhouse keeper for the north rim, they must have had chlorine there. Yeah. But yeah. But you know, also, you got to be careful that nowadays chlorinated water into a natural stream is considered hazard material.
Right. And so you've got to chlorinate the water going in the pipe,
yeah.
not the water going out, overflowing out of the box.
You yeah.
Yeah. Okay, and so then I got another question. The North Rim Lodge had been built back in the 20s, and I'm assuming its water also came from Roaring Springs and was
yep.
pumped up the
yep.
a lift there up to the top. And all that stuff would have been in place when the Trans Canyon Pipeline was built.
And there was a powerhouse down there.
Okay, now the powerhouse was making electricity. Were they making electricity out of the Roaring Springs water?
Yeah.
Okay. That's a large amount of water coming out of there to do all that. Send drinking water up to the North Rim, make electricity, and then send water to the South Rim.
Yeah.
Just kind of thinking about the volume of flow there. Okay.
There's a new modern water pump house there for the North Rim. I mean, it's been built since 60. It was built after I left there from pipeline project.
Can you describe the power plant that they had there at Roaring Springs?
Yeah, vaguely. It was built by, I guess it's built by Utah Parks.
Okay.
So they're the one that operated it.
Okay.
It was a rustic, nice, rustic building. Kind of matched anything CCC would do. It was stone masonry.
Okay.
And I'm trying to remember, I think it had maybe three turbines.
Excuse me.
And it was fed by an 18-inch redwood penstock.
Okay.
It was nearly a mile long, I think. And part of the project for this waterline project was to remove all that, because the North Rim had commercial power now.
Okay.
So there was no, for some reason, I mean, to me it was a historic building, you know, it could have been maybe used for something else, but
right.
it was to be totally removed.
And it was, let's see, so 65, it was probably put in 25, 35, 45, 55, 65. So it would have been under the 50-year cutoff.
Yeah.
So it would have been easy to remove. Were those the turbines you mentioned, were they Pelton wheels, or what kind of, do you remember what sort of power?
They were a horizontal, I can't really, all I ever saw of one of them was after the flood. It was exposed.
Oh my gosh!
And it was laying on its side like a. You can see the blades like the jet plane, that type.
Oh,
of
so it was
fan.
It wasn't a Pelton cup wheel. It was more of a turbine. What do they call it? Leffler? There's another name for that kind of hydroelectric machine.
Yeah.
So that's a high volume, low pressure kind of pump.
Do you have access to that old Pioneer?
I don't right now. I don't right now, but I will look that up.
There's a picture of that damaged power plant, and I highlighted where one of the turbines exposed. You can see one of them.
Okay. I will look for that. But your job in 65 was to remove all that.
Yeah, exactly. And that was interesting. It was, when you walked in there, you thought you were in a scene from Frankenstein.
Oh my gosh!
All these big switches and dials, and it was something to see. It was,
well, that reminds me of the powerhouse. I mean, all these knife switches, open electrical contacts. You get your thumb in there anywhere near that thing, you're going to be burned to charcoal.
Exactly.
You be careful what you're doing.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Huh.
I don't know if it for a fact, but I thought Halverson Lynch had found somebody, maybe in Mexico somewhere, that wanted that equipment.
Oh.
But that just purely.
Well, because you guys were pulling all that out, did they have the option to salvage it however they wanted?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, as long as they bid on it, it was a bid, bid for the project. It was part of the project.
Okay. Huh. Interesting. Did you guys take photos of of all that before it got yanked out, or was it just like, you know, it's not 50 years, so we don't really care about its historical significance, even though we can tell it's old stuff?
You'd have to ask the park to see if they had it had done that. We only did the damage photographs of what got destroyed or
after the flood.
Badly damaged.
Okay.
Yeah, after the flood.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
We had, I'm trying to think.
So I'm just trying to be very careful to the timeline here, because this is in the spring. You met Waldo, and clearly there were going to be some big changes there at Roaring Springs. As you say, the power line had come in, and the North Rim Lodge still needed water. So you were going to have pumps down there to pump.
Yeah, it was separate from this. It had nothing to do with the water line.
Okay, so that was a different deal. It was already set up, and you left that alone.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So the North Rim pump was separate.
And I don't recall any plan on hooking it into the Trench Canyon line.
Okay.
But after the flood, it may have happened.
Hmm. Okay.
Because there's a new, by the time I went back there in 84, there was a new pump house, new to me pump house down there.
Okay.
For the North Rim.
Okay. Well, I imagine, you know, that would have been 20 years later, and pumping, heavy lift like that had gone through some changes, so I'd imagine all that had been updated anyway.
Yeah, you know, all that was built with a tram.
No.
Had a tram cable, tramway down there. That was before helicopters.
Okay.
And when they got ready to build that, the power plant, and the residents had a nice residence down there for the family. There was a family that lived down there for most of the year. Well, during the season, yeah, when the North Rim was open, and family that lived down there, and the powerhouse, and the pump house to the North Rim, there was a cable tramway that went,
okay,
carried all that material down.
Huh. And that would have been removed.
Yeah, there was some foundations you could still see of where the towers were, but
okay,
that was all gone.
When that was gone by the time you showed up in 65?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that penstock during the winter, knowing that place wasn't going to be opened back up, those pipeline crews burned all that redwood.
Oh, wow.
They had 55-gallon drum down there. You try to get some heat down there while they were working.
Huh. So they burned up the redwood. The penstock redwood. Wow. Huh. I wonder, Dan, if this is a good place to put a comma in this interview series, because I'm about ready to ask you a flood of questions.
Well, we hadn't talked about the bridge.
No, we haven't talked about the bridge. We haven't talked about the helicopters. We haven't talked about anything else except you and Waldo in there with sacks of concrete trying to start corralling the water at the mouth of Roaring Springs.
Yep.
All right. Well, maybe this is a good time to go ahead and wrap up part 3. Is there anything else that we in the material that we've covered today that you want to bring in, or are we good for what we've done?
No, I can't think of anything. I might think of something after I hang up.
Okay, well that'll be fine. No problems with that. All right. Well, with that then, let's conclude part 3 of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Dan Cockrum. Today is Sunday, November 26th, 2023. My name is Tom Martin, and Dan, thank you so very much.
Well, you're very welcome.